Oi, lady! Oh, lady!
The shouts came across the waters, echoing up the stones to the back wall of St. Mirabel.
I bid you to go back into the chapel.
Brother Giavno spoke to Dame Guaidra when she arrived on the wall. Behind Guaidra, Father Primujan reached for her arm as if to give motion to Giavno's reasonable request. But Dame Guaidra pulled away.
I need to hear this.
Your Pirate Vanguard's burned, lady!
A sailor on the ship was calling out.
We sacked the good we did! Now, we've your women, and fine they be, lady. Come join us. If you have the roar to your peasants, then welcome you be.
Is it confirmed?
Lady?
Pirith Vanguard, has it been sacked?
Aye. We know not the extent, but one of the brothers sent his spirit across the gulf and saw that Pirith Vanguard has, indeed, been hit hard.
And their claim of stealing women?
I know not.
Could it be true?
Father Primujan had no answer, but his sour expression spoke volumes.
Send forth more brothers in spirit form across the gulf to the length of Vanguard's coast.
We are taxing them greatly. This is no easy task. Few brothers can so energize the soul stone for such a journey, and fewer still can do so repeatedly.
I will know the fate of Vanguard.
It is a difficult task and dangerous.
I know the risks, but I will know of my home.
It is a difficult time.
Dawson McKeague tore off a piece of smoke-dried fish and chomped it hard, then spat it out onto the deck. For he, too, heard the echoes of the taunts being hurled from the decks of the Palmaristown warships aimed at his beloved Dame Guaidra. How helpless he felt. Lady Dreamer had run fast from Ethelbert Dosentel, sweeping past the few fishing boats still sailing along the Mantis Arm and catching the strong Marianic breezes on their turn into the Gulf of Corona. It hadn't taken them long to recognize the coming problems, however, for the Gulf waters were thick with warships, Palmaristown and Delaval City's fleet. Lady Dreamer had a short keel, though, and so the coastal shallows served as their sanctuary from the much larger warships, both because they could keep out of reach of the deeper riding ships in many areas, and because the shore provided them with some measure of camouflage. Still, Lady Dreamer only unfurled her sails under the cover of night, for if she was sighted, she would be shadowed by an increasing fleet of hostile ships and would be boxed in against the shore with nowhere to flee. They weren't many miles from the cove and St. Mirabel's docks now, as the crow might fly, but Dawson knew that the treacherous waters and uneven reefs meant more than a day of hard sailing to get in. And he knew, too, that they'd never make it without fighting through at least two warships, each of them twice Lady Dreamer's size. They couldn't get home by sea. It would take at least 2 days of sailing to find a proper place to debark for a hike to the chapel, and even then, what obstacles, what ranks of enemy soldiers might they find?
Man in the water!
Sailors began running to the starboard rail, pointing anxiously. Dawson looked all about in confusion, for no other boats were to be seen. Had one of his men fallen overboard in these calm seas? He understood when he arrived at the rail, but his eyes went even wider in surprise. The description, man in the water, didn't really fit, he decided, for this one was more on top of the water. In fact, running on top of the water.
Brother Pinauer!
The monk reached the side of the Vanguard flagship.
Might I trouble you for a rope?
Makes me glad we got no women.
Nurgle, the powery captain, spoke to the first officer of his barrel boat as they, too, listened to the wicked taunting of the Palmaristown crew.
All them long legs I'd ever thinking about.
The first mate winked lewdly at the captain.
You wantin' to sink the dogs?
Nurgle scanned the waters, noting three other warships within an easy sail of the one whose crew was doing all the shouting. He had only three other barrel boats in his shiver, and these enemies weren't the smaller ships so common along the outer shore.
Nah. Sicknickel and his boys are waiting for us in the river. If we find any of these sailing alone, we'll put her to the waves and put our boys to the blade. But we're not going against this many afore we've met up with the rest of the boys.
I'll get us moving, then.
The first mate moved back to the hold in the ranks of Powries at the pedals.
Sooner we get to the river, the sooner we get to spill some blood. Me beret's going dull.
Aye, get us moving, but keep us wide.
Nurgle really didn't want to engage these particular warships, whose decks were full of archers. Normally, he wouldn't have cared much about the odds, but Sicknickel's call had been full of optimism that there would be plentiful bloodletting along those riverbanks. Patience, would make his beret shine all the more. It took all of Dawson's willpower to keep from screaming several times, particularly when he and Brother Pinhour crossed near to jagged rocks with a heavy surf threatening to wash them in hard. Dawson held to Pinhour's hand with all his strength, thoroughly uncomfortable with this magical water walking. But that hand-to-hand connection extended the magical powers of the Malachite from Pinhour to him. If he let go, the cold, dark waters would take him. By the time the two finally got into the cove near St. Mirabelle's docks, a pre-dawn glow had brightened the eastern sky, and by the time they got onto the docks themselves, the morning light shone brilliantly. But no more brilliantly to Dawson than the image of Dame Gwydra and of Callan Duarne when he met them soon after. He rushed to his lady and kissed her hand, then swept over to Callan and crushed her in a great hug and a passionate kiss.
I told you I'd be back for you.
I never doubted you.
You delivered my emissaries?
Aye, they're with Ethelbert. And it seems we've an alliance.
Dawson noted Kay Dale staring at him hopefully, but the daunting question came not from her, but from Callan, standing at his side.
Any news of Branson, then?
We didn't see him, no. But Cormac and Mulcaila will find out where he is, don't you doubt?
Many exchanged concerned looks at the hesitancy in Dawson's response, and all of those gazes eventually settled on Kaedale.
You didn't see him, but what word did you hear? You wouldn't be a smart one to start lying to me now.
We're worried for him, to be sure. But we heard no word, and truth be told, we fear to ask too much. Ethelbert's bodyguard, a woman of Bear, is carrying a sword much like Branson's. Our guess is that the two of them met. She's just like him in that Jetsa 2 thing, so we're hoping he's out working for her.
But you're fearing...
Not for knowing. Cormac and Mulcaila will learn the truth of him, if there's any truth to be known in Ethelbert's domain.
So, we have Ethelbert with us, and that is no small thing. But our scouts claim that Yeselnik marches once more to Ethelbert Dorsental, and he has us trapped in here by that wretched Panla Maris on the land and a great armada in the Gulf.
And they're hidden at Vanguard, so they're shouting.
They are. The brothers have ventured there in spirit form.
We're not forgetting to our kin.
Then what are we here to do? We cannot simply sit behind these walls and hope that the events of the world will turn in our favor.
Cormac will approach Bannergrown of Pride as we proposed. He is a fine emissary, and I believe that Master Riandu will support our proposition.
Bannergrown will more likely be swayed if we secure the former alliances of Ethelbert, the coastal holdings east of here. Let us bring them into our alliance. Brave Brother Pinhour has shown us that Milwellis's net isn't nearly as tight as he believes after all. My ship awaits not far from here, I trust.
Sitting quiet in a cove.
It is time for me to go out. But fear not, for I will not walk openly, and I will not walk alone.
If all of the brothers and all the former prisoners here at St. Mirabelle were to accompany you, and Dawson's crew as well, it would not be enough. Lady, I beg. You are too important to take such a chance.
I cannot simply sit here to the drumming of Panlamaris's catapults and the songs of sailors' taunts while the world is conquered around us, Father Primujan.
And if you go out and are caught, then there is no hope against Yeselnik. None.
Brother Jurgian had just left the side of another monk that had been driven over the brink of insanity by his constant work with the Soul Stones. He stormed up to Dame Gwydra's chambers, bursting through the door before the woman had even bade him to enter.
Brother!
How many will die for your insatiable need to scour your beloved vanguard to confirm the tragedies that Paul Morristown sailors yell at us every day? It is madness!
Nay, brother, I am no less concerned than you regarding your brethren, and I salute their heroism in going forth in spirit form.
You act as if they have a voice in the matter.
No more than the warrior who charges the enemy line.
Jurgian winced at that honest reply as he slid into the chair.
We have lost another one. Our ranks thin.
But you are training more?
Do you mean to destroy the whole of our order?
Would you prefer the stewardship of Father de Gilb and the Church of the Divine King?
The cutting question settled Jurgian, and he looked away.
Dawson McKeague came into St. Mirabelle this day. Brave Brother Pinhour's gamble in running across the waves brought us great news and hope.
Jurgian reluctantly nodded.
It is our only hope. We will know of far-off events before our enemies learn of the situation, and so we will prove more nimble. With the spirit walking of brothers, perhaps our armies will better position for a battle, or we'll learn of traps Yasselnik sets for us. You cannot underestimate the value of that, brother. What commander would not wish to know the movements of his enemy's armies?
Nimble, we can barely depart these gates.
Before Gwydra could reply, an out-of-breath brother Giavno rushed into the room.
Bath Cove.
The fishing village?
Giavno nodded and worked to catch his breath.
No.
A victory. A great victory for us. Your warriors set a trap for the Palmaris town ships. Many of Pyrrh Vanguard's refugees found their way to Bath Cove, and so they were prepared.
How do you know this?
I was there, in spirit.
That brought a nod to Jurgian from Gwydra.
I told them of the coming of the Palmaris town fleet.
By St. Abel.
3 Palmaris town warships taken whole. 3 Palmaris town crews killed or captured.
Oh, this is fine news.
There is more, lady. The Vanguardsmen are organizing to sail south. A large armada full of warriors to their lady's side, they believe.
They will be sunk in the Gulf, even with the 3 Palmaris town warships at the tip of their flotilla.
I tried to caution them, but I dared not engage too closely without returning to report on the turn of events.
Dame Gwydra nodded and looked to Jurgian. The monk knew well the risk of Giavno's act. To walk in spirit form was dangerous enough, but imparting information in such a state would put a brother in close contact with another being, often too close to resist the almost irrepressible temptation of possession. Giavno had gotten away with it once, apparently, but he was risking his sanity in the act. But Jurgian couldn't deny the potential here for exactly that which Gwydra had claimed.
Go out again when you are able, brother. I beg of you. You and many others, myself included.
You would venture forth in spirit?
With coordination, we brothers can guide this vanguard fleet. Perhaps they will avoid the warships of King Yasselnik.
You are our strength. The brothers of Blessed Abel afford us a power that our enemy cannot know and cannot match. Go with honor, pride, and great care, I beg. We will know quickly what they will not fathom for days or weeks, and that will be our advantage.
Master Riandur looked from the trio of robed brothers to the other observer, the Laird of Pride, who scowled as they moved out the far side of the monk enclave of the wider army encampment. Master Riandu walked slowly across the way, garnering Bonnegrand's attention as he approached.
No word from Branson.
Bonnegrand didn't look at him, but kept staring at the departing monks, who were not monks at all.
They're fleeing?
I cannot ask them to go to war with their brethren.
So you allow them to fight beside their brethren against us?
No, Laird. No, never that. The battle is ended for them. They will find a chapel.
I am to trust that?
They joined the Order.
I allowed you to claim they had joined the Order so that we did not have to follow King Yasselnik's demand that all of Ethelbald's prisoners be put to death. You repay my mercy by betraying me?
I did not betray—
They will flee to Laird Ethelbald's side at first opportunity. They will be given arms and will return to kill your fellow men of pride.
I have their word. The war is over for them. All they want is to return to their families. Surely you cannot disagree with that.
You try my patience, monk.
I recognize your humanity.
Or is it that Master Riandu, too, is thinking of deserting the cause of King Yasselnik?
Riandu rocked back on his heels, not blinking and not replying.
It is true. You chose to bring those 3 along and selected the other brothers among the flock of Chapel Pride because these are the ones who wish to flee the cause of King Yasselnik. You would leave me, would leave your fellow men of pride on the battlefield without gemstone healing.
No, no. We will stay throughout the fight to aid the men of pride and all the wounded who come to us.
But would you deny King Yasselnik?
I serve the Order of Blessed Abel, whose masters reside at St. Mirabel in the north of Hans. I have heard no good of this man, Father Dekilb, whom King Yasselnik has determined to speak as the leader of this new Church of the Divine King. You cannot ask me to renounce my allegiance any more than Bonnegrand would have renounced his loyalty to Laird Prideay, were he still alive.
A brave admission. I could tie you to 4 horses and send them running to the point of the compass for merely speaking those treasonous words.
I would rather that than renounce Father Ottolenghi.
Bonnegrand looked at him as if he had lost his mind, but only for a few moments.
Laird Bonnegrand, not I, nor any of my brethren will desert you in this fight should it come.
And after the fight?
Master Riandu could only stare at him, letting the words hang empty in the air. He stood there for some time, watching Bonnegrand as the man receded among the tents and other soldiers. Strangely, Riandu found that he wasn't surprised by the laird's seeming indifference. Bonagrand's heart wasn't in this campaign, wasn't for King Yezelnik. Riandu was certain that Bonagrand fairly hated the foppish pretender. Still, Riandu had all but admitted that he would defect to Artolivan, who was now openly opposing Yezelnik. Actually, witnessing Bonagrand's nonchalance in the face of that was no small thing. Riandu closed his eyes and reconsidered his course, not for the first time, and he doubted for the last. His loyalty was to Artolivan and the Order of Blessed Abel, the real one, and not the shadow church King Yezelnik was trying to create. The monks with chapel pride agreed with that decision almost to a man, as they had applauded Master Riandu for cleverly dodging the king's order to execute the prisoners held at chapel pride. But Riandu's heart was for Pride Town most of all. Pride was his home. His family had been there for as long as any could remember, many generations, and Riandu had grown to respect and admire Bonagrand as well. How could he leave his home and his laird? But how could he not, if remaining there meant a declaration of fealty to that awful Father de Gilb and this new made-up church whose name elevated the wretched Yezelnik to divine?
It will all work out.
He reminded himself that the issue between King Yezelnik and Father Artolivan was far from settled. Likely they would come to an accord, since no army could possibly topple the great fortress that was St. Mirabel, and since, when at last the war between the lairds was over, it would be in no one's best interest to continue a fight between church and state. The assurance found little hold in Riandu's heart, though, for the master had more than enough personal experience with King Yezelnik to know that the man could not be trusted to do the right thing, particularly as far as the common folk were concerned. Still, the monk could hope, he supposed.
Master!
He glanced about, spotting the monk and others gathered on a knoll, pointing to the tree line. Riandu understood their excitement, and his own eyes widened indeed when he, too, spotted Branson. The young warrior looked haggard indeed, and though no wound was evident upon him, Riandu had to think that he had suffered some type of physical trauma, for he held one hand up to his forehead and walked shakily, not quite stork-like, but certainly not with the agile and balanced strides of the highwayman. Riandu rushed down to him, but Branson didn't stop or glance at or acknowledge him in any way.
What is it?
Riandu noted that it was indeed a soul stone that Branson was pressing against his forehead. Master Riandu nearly gagged. The stork had returned and persisted, even though Branson had a soul stone against his forehead. Riandu rushed to Branson's side and took him by the arm.
Branson, what has happened?
I need rest.
Riandu ushered Branson quickly to a tent at a cot and eased him down. Branson lay there for some time, staring off to the side, though he was surely looking at things within his own mind and not at Riandu or anything else in the tent. Soon after, the exhausted Branson fell fast asleep.
A strip of cloth.
The other monk rushed from the tent and returned almost immediately with a small square of wool. Riandu rolled it up and tied it about Branson's forehead, setting the soul stone underneath it to hold it in place. Riandu dismissed the other monks, but he didn't depart with them. He sat beside Branson throughout the rest of the day, occasionally using a second soul stone to infuse the weary young warrior with warm waves of healing magic. Finally, as the night deepened, Master Riandu stood to take his leave, to gather some dinner before retiring.
You were right.
Riandu spun back to see the young warrior open his eyes.
Does that fill you with pride?
What do you mean?
Branson looked away.
You could not do it. You could not kill them.
Does that please you?
More than you can imagine, my friend.
Branson's frown melted into a look of curiosity.
Did you think I would cheer your fall from morality? Did you believe that I would be glad to learn that you, a wonderful and generous soul I have known since your childhood, were as crass and callous as so many of these supposed leaders?
Perhaps I am not as brave as I assumed.
Brave? You are no assassin, Branson Gerebond, nor is this other image of you that you name the highwayman. You have never been an assassin.
Ancient Bodden would not agree with your assessment.
In killing Ancient Bodden, you saved hundreds of innocents. In that act, you ended a war, and the man was deserving of his end. But this pact you forged with Bonnegran... No, Branson, that was not a just and moral agreement. You knew it. And in the moment of truth, when you could not continue your deception of your heart, when continuing would fundamentally and adversely change the man you are, you chose the correct road. I could not be happier.
I am afflicted once more.
What happened? Did you suffer a wound?
No.
When did it occur? Did you engage in a fight?
The fight was over, and I won and was not injured. I had her, head back and helpless.
It wasn't hard for Master Riandu to piece the rest of it together. The stork had manifested itself to save Branson from his worst instincts, the monk master believed, and he was very glad for it. He grabbed Branson's hands in his own and squeezed them gently.
And now I am crippled once more.
Was it not this gesture to training that you claimed had freed you of the stork and of the need to use the soul stone?
Branson looked at him, obviously intrigued and apparently unwilling to admit it.
What would that discipline say to Branson in that situation? Are the Jester too assassin?
No.
Is that not anathema to their beliefs?
It's all a lie.
Riandu said not another word that night and stayed with Branson for a long while until the emotionally battered young man fell asleep once more. Branson burst from the tent the next morning with the soul stone strapped securely to his forehead and his black silk mask hanging loosely about his neck. He wasn't solid on his feet, though certainly more balanced than he had seemed the previous day.
You slept well?
Yes.
That is good, because we have a long march before us by order of Laird Bonnegran. If you intend to continue this road, I mean.
I will retrieve my sword and the brooch Father Ottolevin gave me. And then I will be gone, far from this place, far from Yezelnik's haunts.
You concede the land to him?
It is a foregone conclusion.
So where will you run? Alpinador? To Bear, perhaps, the home of the Jest Two.
Or to Vanguard. To the wilds of the north, beyond the reach of Yezelnik's soldiers. I will gather Kaedale and Callan, and we will be gone across the gulf. To all the world, the highwaymen will be dead.
Dead?
Yes.
That is how you want it?
Yes.
And those who would benefit from the work of the highwayman should be content with their miserable lot in life, because the highwayman could not be bothered to champion them.
I care not. My road is my own to choose, and my responsibility is to myself and to my wife and family.
The army was on the march soon after, and it was a swift march indeed, as Riandu had promised. They continued east around the same ridgeline from which Branson had levitated two nights previous, then turned southeast, a straight line for the still distant city of Ethelbert Dosentel. The sun disappearing in the west, they had just ended the march to settle in for the night when Bonnegran's chariot rumbled into the midst of the monks. Riandu rushed to greet him.
Get in the chariot. There will be a parley. You will stand beside me.
A parley? With whom?
Climb up!
Riandu motioned to direct Bonnegran's gaze to the side near a stretch of thick pines where Branson loitered. Bonnegran flicked the reins to get his team moving, eight other chariots sweeping in his wake. He didn't continue through the monk enclave, nor did he turn back as Riandu had expected. Instead, the chariot veered toward the young warrior standing alone by the pines.
A parley with Laird Ethelbert's representatives, perhaps including the ones you seek.
Branson rushed up, and Bonnegran motioned to the next chariot in line, then set his team moving again. This time, back the way they had come. Branson had barely set his feet on the floorboards before the second chariot in line rumbled away. The remaining seven came behind in a line. They crossed out of the vast encampment in its forward point, the intersection of the eastern and southern roads. To the south they went, Bonnegran maintaining the lead. He pulled his chariot off the right-hand side of the road and onto a grassy lea shaded by the canopy of a line of large oak trees. The three chariots immediately following with attendants turned with the laird, but with practiced precision, the next three rumbled along the road right past the meeting point, while the remaining two held far back to the north. As his chariot came to a stop, Branson jumped down and moved out onto the road to watch the lead teams. They climbed a slight incline to the south to the highest point of the road, and there two pulled up, while the third turned about to serve as relay for any information to the main encampment. The three charioteers began sorting out the proprieties of the planned meeting, while Master Riandu stayed near to Bunagran, who moved to the far side of the line of oaks and was staring off to the southwest. Brenson moved nearer to them, subtly hoping to overhear.
It will be his surrender. Ethelbert's men have little fight left in them. They know they cannot win.
Lord Ethelbert is a proud man.
Which is why he will come out to you. Never would he hand his sword to King Yeselnik. But there is no dishonor in surrendering to the Bear of Haunts and the Army of Pride. Not after the reputation you and your followers have rightly earned in the course of this war. Was it not Bunagran who sent Laird Ethelbert fleeing from Pride when Ethelbert thought the field was surely won?
Bunagran didn't respond, but Branson knew that the sour look on his face was honest humility. This was the man who had brought such misery to Garabond Womack, Branson reminded himself. Branson felt itchy, beads of sweat forming on his forehead. The world was too harsh, too vile, and even these men, to whom he had to admit some affinity, particularly to Riandu, were part of that hardness.
Never forget that.
Both Bunagran and Riandu turned to regard him.
Do you have a history of battle with Laird Ethelbert? Laird Ethelbert is an honorable man, perhaps, but he is one who has been bitten hard by the cold iron of Bunagran of Pride.
Perhaps. An honorable man, perhaps.
His assassins. Employing Hu Lei impugns his honor.
The Laird looked at Branson curiously, then dismissively, before turning away. More interested was Master Riandu, who stared at Branson and nodded, and then, on sudden impulse it seemed, pointed up into the trees. It took Branson only a few heartbeats to understand his meaning, and the young warrior nodded and smiled slyly. As Bunagran turned back to regard him, Branson used his malachite gem to lessen his weight and leaped high, landing nimbly on the lowest branch. Branson moved along the branches to a place of concealment, just above where they were expecting Ethelbert's emissaries to stand. Barely had Branson settled when one of the forward scout chariots came roaring back down the road.
Laird Ethelbert himself! Laird Bunagran! It is Laird Ethelbert himself who comes to parley!
Branson looked to see Bunagran and Riandu exchanging glances, both obviously impressed.
How many with him?
A contingent of only a handful, but it was old Laird Ethelbert, to be sure, centering their ride.
Be alert! Fetch the trailing chariots and move them closer. Near enough to strike, should treachery be shown.
Aye, Laird. There are only a few with Ethelbert. A pair of monks, a pair of women, and another man, of bear, I believe, and dressed in the black silks of the highwayman.
Above them in the tree, Branson tensed. He crawled out and strained his eyes to the south road, arriving at his perch just in time to see the contingent cresting the hill and walking their horses slowly between the two remaining forward chariots. It was indeed Laird Ethelbert, astride a large white stallion, holding the fiery beast with a sure hand. Branson noted Afwin Wee and Merwal Yana, as he had expected from the charioteer's description, trotting along easily beside their laird. Of the other three, he could not be certain from this distance. A pair of monks, yes, and a woman dressed in the garb of the Northland of Alpinador, a woman dressed in barbarian shamanistic clothing, all-tooth necklaces and feathers, much as Milkayla had worn. Branson found that he could hardly draw breath. It was Milkayla, and one of the monks was surely Cormac. Milkayla and Cormac with Laird Ethelbert. Milkayla and Cormac walking their mounts beside the murderous Afwin Wee and her vile consort Merwal Yana. What could it mean? Branson lost sight of them briefly in the maze of branches below, but he heard the horses stop at the edge of the lee and the four riders dismount. They walked over in a line, five holding back a few steps, and only Laird Ethelbert stepping out to stand right before Bunagran.
You look well, Laird of Pride. And though we are, or were, enemies, know that I have watched you with continued admiration.
You are too generous.
Can we not enjoy the respite in some measure of civility and calm?
True enough. I have not forgotten our journeys together along the Mantis Arm, chasing powries into the sea. Forgive me, my sword's edge. I am weary of war.
As are we all. There is nothing to forgive.
Most generous.
You are surprised to see me here, of course. And you are surprised, no doubt, that I called for a parley. It would seem as if there is nothing left to say.
Yes.
But the situation has changed.
Ethelbert turned to the monk on his right.
This is Father Destros of Chapel Entel.
Beside me stands Master Riandu of Chapel Pride.
Who follows Father Artelevan?
Branson focused on Riandu's reaction, noted the frown that momentarily crossed his face, and noted, too, that Laird Ethelbert didn't miss that scowl.
The Order has broken with Laird Yezelnik.
King Yezelnik, and only a faction of the Church has turned from his certain victory. A foolish move.
Or a move of principle. What say you, Brother Riandu?
Ethelbert's discerning gaze made Riandu shrink away, more so when he saw Bonnegran turning to scowl at him.
I am told by both Father Destros here and my visitors from St. Mirabel that this alternative church Laird Yezelnik desires will hardly resemble the tenets and truths of the Order of Blessed Abel. Surely it is more of a political alliance of convenience than any agreement rooted in faith.
I know nothing of the spat, nor do I care.
You do not care? A powerful faction has joined the ranks of your enemies. Surely that is cause of concern for Laird Bonnegran. Nor is this defection just the Church, although that defection alone should give you pause. Nay, Cormac and his lovely companion, Michaela of Alpinador, sailed to Ethelbert Dosentel as emissaries, not only of Father Artelevan, who rules the Abelicans at St. Mirabel, but of Dame Guidra of Vanguard.
Bonnegran tried not to appear impressed, Branson saw clearly from above. But for Branson, it was all he could do to hold his position and not fall out of the tree in the unsettling wake of such overwhelming news. Dame Guidra and Father Artelevan had allied with Laird Ethelbert? Did they not know that Ethelbert was every bit the scoundrel as Yezelnik? Did they not know that Ethelbert employed murderers and knaves, and that Jameson Sequind, friend to Dame Guidra, had been murdered by Ethelbert's assassins? Branson had to breathe deeply to steady himself, but too late, he realized, as both Afwinwi and Merwal Yana suddenly tensed at Ethelbert's side, the woman drawing her sword and lifting it his way.
What treachery is this, Laird Bonnegran? I had thought you an honorable man.
He stopped as Branson dropped from the branches, landing lightly and unthreateningly at Bonnegran's side.
Oh, Branson!
No treachery.
I will have my mother's sword.
Afwinwi smiled at him so wickedly.
I will have that sword and the brooch you stole from me.
Took from you mean? By right of my superior rank and by right of my victory in battle against you, traitor.
We feared you dead, but were told...
Lies, no doubt. For that is the way of the Hule.
Does this young man speak for you, Laird Bonnegran?
Be silent, fool!
You come to parley as emissaries of Dame Guidra.
Branson aimed his remarks at Cormac and Milkela.
To ally with Ethelbert?
Control your man, Laird Bonnegran!
A much larger man, Bonnegran grabbed Branson hard by the upper arm and pulled him back.
Would Dame Guidra be so willing for such an alliance if she knew that Laird Ethelbert's assassins had murdered Jameson Sequin?
Cormac and Milkela fell back at that, staring alternately from Afwinwi and Merwal Yana to Laird Ethelbert. More telling to Branson was the reaction of the other monk, Father Destros, his face a mask of fear, as if he had known or at least had suspected the dark secret of Jameson's demise.
This is not about you or your friend, boy. You were not invited to speak.
Murderer! Murderess! I will have my mother's sword if I have to pry it from your dying grasp, from your cold, dead hand.
Both Afwinwi and Merwal Yana started forward at the threat.
Halt!
With a ferocious scowl upon his face, the Laird motioned the pair back behind him.
Put your sword away! These issues are beyond my knowledge. We will learn the truth of it all, I promise. In the confusion that is war, many die needlessly.
What do you want, Laird Ethelbert? You asked for parley, and so I am here. I honor your flag of truce.
And I yours.
But my patience thins in light of these revelations, and in the face of your warrior's threat.
No threat. I did not come to threaten, but to offer.
Then make your offer.
Join us. I know you, Bonnegran of Pride. I have witnessed you in battle, both as footman and as general, and I know that you cannot stomach the likes of that snot-nosed nephew of Laird Delaval.
Beware your words of King Yezelnik.
King Yezelnik. He is not prepared to lead a single small holding, let alone the whole of Hans. Were he a farmer, his crops would die and his chickens would starve. He could not throw a fishing line into the Mirianic without falling in behind it.
It is more than a matter of competence.
Cormac stepped up beside Ethelbert,
It is a question of judgment and morality. Dame Guaidra has chosen to side with...
Do you speak for Dame Guaidra?
I do. We do.
And for Father Otto Leven?
He does.
I do.
It was not Dame Guaidra's intent to take sides in this conflict. She sailed south to deliver news of the defeat of ancient Baden in Vanguard, and the ascendance of the Order of the Blessed Abel in those northern reaches. She came to see if she could mediate in this terrible war, to help heal the wounds of Hans.
A wiser course than the one you have ultimately chosen.
It was the immorality of Yes... King Yesonik's proclamation. The Dactyl-inspired demand that those prisoners who had served Laird Ethelbert be murdered. That foul edict demanded our course and the decision of Father Otto Leven.
It was not only an affront to those men who had served my army, but one to your own soldiers.
Bonnegrand didn't look very convinced.
Would your warriors not face more difficult fighters if they marched against an enemy who knew that to surrender was to be put to the sword? Is not the offering of mercy and safe return a valuable parley position to a general who has won the field and does not wish to inflict wholesale slaughter upon his enemy?
The winds have turned against Yesonik. All of Vanguard and the Brothers of Abel have thrown in with Laird Ethelbert.
All of Vanguard? Palmaristan alone puts more men on the field than your Dame Guaidra can manage. And not all of the Brothers have run to the call of a traitor, Father Otto Leven.
Bonnegrand turned to regard Riandu, who withered under the Laird's imposing stare.
Father Otto Leven answers to a higher king than any mere mortal man.
Does he indeed? Would ancient Baden's deluded minions not say the same of him?
It is for the good of Hans, for the good of the common folk of Hans, that Dame Guaidra and Father Otto Leven have chosen to oppose Yesonik.
They will be buried side by side, then.
And not for any personal gain. Laird Bonnegrand, I beseech you.
It is all for personal gain, whether for Dame Guaidra or Laird Ethelbert or King Yesonik. Whether for Father Otto Leven or Father de Gilb or Master Riandu there. For all of us, you fool. Spare me your words of greater imperative or nobler cause. A man thrusts his spear into the gut of another for the cause of personal gain, and not out of nobility. A Laird seeks alliance for personal gain, or begins a war to expand his holding. No doubt your Dame Guaidra eyes a foothold on the civilized lands in recompense for her token support of Laird Ethelbert. She will soon come to regret that choice of ally, though. You have no doubt heard the scope of my force, and it is but one of King Yesonik's three great armies. You are sorely outnumbered, outarmed, and out-armored.
But if you were to join with us...
The outcome of the fight would be less assured.
For the good of the common folk of Hans.
For many more years of war, you mean. And for the same outcome for those who survive the march of armies, whether Ethelbert or Yesonik claim the throne.
It will be neither.
Do tell.
When the war is won, Hans will have no king, but a queen.
A queen? Your Dame Guaidra. Some huntress from the wilds of Vanguard will conquer Hans. Laird Ethelbert, you would agree with this?
I did not completely.
How desperate you must be, Laird Ethelbert. It pains me to witness you as a broken man. You, who were once a leader among men, and for so long. I will honor your flag of truce, though I would be doing you a favor to take your head and be done with this foolishness here and now.
Behind Ethelbert, Afwen Wee brought a hand to her sword hilt. Behind Afwen Wee, Bonnegrand's men similarly moved. Ethelbert held up his hand to calm his volatile assassin.
You have revealed your desperation, Laird Ethelbert. Your wisest course, all of you, would be to surrender and accept Yesonik as king, and pray that he have mercy upon you.
I know you, Laird Bonnegrand of Pride. I have seen you in battle. I saved your life once and Laird Prydays and the lives of many of your soldiers when the Powrys had you trapped in a gully.
That was a long time ago.
But not so long that I have forgotten the Bear of Hans, Prydays' champion. I know your axe, and so I know your heart. And that heart cannot suffer the fool Yesonik, who has never bloodied a blade against a man who could defend himself.
I remember that day in the East, when Laird Ethelbert did not shy with fear but came on to secure the flank of Pride. Out of respect for that day, I allow you to leave now in peace and return to your city. For your own sake, reconsider your foolish course.
Spend the night in contemplation. This is an important decision, friend.
A night will not change all that has gone before.
As a personal favor to a man who once saved your life, I will return in the morning under a flag of parley.
Ethelbert and Bonnegrand stared at each other for a few heartbeats then. Ethelbert started away, his entourage turning in his wake, all but Afwen Wee. She waited until Bonnegrand started off in the opposite direction.
Highwayman, come and get your sword.
Branson steeled his gaze and started forward. But Riandu rushed up to grab him. That alone would not have stopped the determined Branson. But Bonnegrand veered to move right in front of him, scowling fiercely.
They came holding a flag of truce. Do not dare begin your vendetta under the banner of Pride Town.
She challenged.
Let it pass!
She wants my sword because she broke her own in the chest of your beloved Delavor.
But Bonnegrand didn't blink, and Branson turned back to regard Afwen Wee. She was smiling her wicked smile. Branson knew that no matter the outcome of the war, whatever alliance or terms of surrender or conquest might occur, he and Afwen Wee would have their fight, and only one would survive it. On shaky legs, the men carried the boulder, the tent they had brought across the field this morning. Arms ached. Fingers had long ago blackened from blood blisters where rocks had fallen upon them. They had to stop, but could not, for Laird Panlimaris was ever watchful and full of rage and ire, more than ready to deal out harsh discipline. Milwellis watched it all with mounting concern. Day by day by day, his father had grown angrier and more obsessed with Dame Gwydra.
Hurry with that missile! The beam is set and ready to throw! Be quick, I tell you, or you'll feel the cold iron of my sword!
The flustered and exhausted porters tried to pick up their pace, but they grew uneven in their strides, and the support poles moved too far apart, dropping the stone to the grass.
Idiots!
Father, Father, no!
Your point is made, Laird.
Panlimaris looked to Harcourt, as did Milwellis, when they too looked down the hill to see the crew working frantically, finally hoisting the boulder once more and double-stepping up the hill toward the waiting catapult. They understood Harcourt's meaning.
You're thinking that I was making a threat to get them moving. Might be that I was just thinking of killing one of the fools.
Father, I beg.
That witch Gwydra set the beasts upon Palmaris Town, upon your home. Your home! Powery rats in your home!
He spun about to see more than a few of his bedraggled warriors staring at him wide-eyed from afar.
Every catapult's throwing! Fill the damned place with stones!
I know.
Your home!
The large laird grabbed him by the throat with tremendous force. He shoved Milwellis back again.
I don't want you begging. I want the witch Gwydra begging. On her knees and begging. Aye, but I'll take her good then. I'll have her every way a man can, and when I'm done with her, I'll spit on her and kick her and cut her open, chin to mound. Now get those porters running and get those damned catapults throwing, or I'll put you in the damned basket and fling you against the chapel wall.
Milwellis blanched and fell back another step.
Go!
Milwellis staggered away.
My lad, Prince Milwellis is of fine progeny. He has made a great name for himself and for the line of Panlimaris.
I will have that witch.
It would not do to embarrass Milwellis in front of the men he has so finely commanded.
The laird stared at Harcourt for a moment longer, then stalked away. She was a fair thing, barely past her 10th birthday and full of life and love. Work on the farm was hard, to be sure, even for the child, for her father and older brother were off to war, and she and her mother and her aunt had to keep the gardens tilled and weeded. But she was happy when she went to her chores in the field outside the small town of Green Meadow. It was a beautiful summer day in the pretty town of trees and pastures, with the silver snake of the Maser Delaval glistening in the west. On a clear day, the high walls of Delaval City could be seen far to the south, particularly if there had been a morning rain and the white stones of the great city glistened with wetness. Not today, though, for the clouds lay heavy, and every so often a gentle mist drizzled about her. That didn't diminish the young girl's smile. She skipped across the small field to the far planting, hoping to collect some squash in the basket she carried. She paused before she got there, puzzled by the sight of someone amidst the crops. She thought it another child, perhaps her age, for he stood about the same height as her, though his limbs and torso were much thicker.
Hey, boy, I'm you!
She used the nickname her father had often tagged on her, a gibberish word created for the sake of an old joke about silly children running errands to the town's common market. The other fellow stopped and turned about, and she grew even more perplexed, for he was indeed her height, but his face was hairy like an adult, and his clothing was most unusual. She didn't know the significance of a Powry beret. She had never heard of the bloody-capped dwarves. She was smiling until the very instant a serrated blade caught her throat. All along the eastern bank of the Mesa del Val, the Powry barrel boat slid onto the sand, the eager dwarves pouring forth, knives in hand. Mischief had transformed to open war, and in a Powry war, there were no innocents and no civilians. The goal was to kill anyone and everyone they encountered, to murder people in their sleep if possible, to chase them down through the fields and forests and slay them, all of them. Their orders were to avoid the large cities of Palmaris Town and Delaval and to focus instead on the many small villages, most no more than clusters of three or four homes. Sweep the rural areas of humans, chase them to their great cities, and then slip away to the waters of the Great River, the Gulf of Corona, and the Mirianic Ocean. They would strike and strike again along the river, the Gulf, and the seacoast. They would pay back the humans for staking Powrys on long poles outside of Palmaris Town. 1,000 dead would not sate their bloodlust. 10,000 dead would not sate their bloodlust. 10,000 dead human children would not sate their bloodlust. The counterweight fell, the wheel spun, and the long arm of the trebuchet swung, launching the rock through the morning air. There came the sharp retort as the stone exploded against the thick and unyielding wall of St. Mirabel. As one of the artillerymen turned to regard Panlimaris, who stood, scowling as always of late, and staring at the chapel with hatred etched upon his old face. Not far away, Prince Milwellis clapped his hands in salute to the crew, the first who had actually hit the distant chapel in more than a day.
More! Knock them into the sea!
Easy, my lord. There aren't enough rocks in all of Haunts to knock down those walls.
There are, and we'll bring them. And we'll throw, hour after hour, day and night, until the place falls or fills. I'll have that witch.
King Yeselnik bids us to merely hold the siege.
I'll not be taking advice from the likes of the boy Yeselnik. I'll let him play it, King, but only because of the gains to Palmaris Town, and only because he's better than the witch up that hill, and better than Laird Ethelbert. So we'll do as he asks, as long as it's what we're wanting. Now, I'm wanting more than to sit here and wait while that witch who sent the Powrys to Palmaris Town rests easy.
She is not resting easy. The siege will play upon her sensibilities, as will the occasional throws of the catapults.
Occasional?
To weaken their walls and weaken their resolve.
Every day, dawn to dusk and dusk to dawn, like the cadence drums of a tireless marching army. When Vanguard falls, what will Dame Gwydra think, I wonder? When Ethelbert is pushed into the sea, how maddening will our thunder sound to Father Otto Leven and his fellow fools.
Might they come forth?
If they do, we will kill them. If they do not, we will go in and kill them.
Our spearmen and archers could not reach them behind their walls, but oh, how their magical bolts reach down at you. Would you shed more Palmaris Town blood against those impregnable walls? Please, lad, I beg of you to let Chapel of Bell be their prison.
Panlimaris began a stream of curses at Arto Levin and the monks then and didn't stop until long after when Father de Gilb walked over to join them.
I thought you'd be halfway to Delaval City this late in the morn.
The priest had traveled from Pride only to deliver King Yeselnik's report with plans to be out the next morning to begin organizing the new Church of the Divine King from the streets of Delaval City.
I do so enjoy watching the great stones thunder against the foolishness of Arto Levin. When I am properly seated within Chapel of Bell, perhaps I will leave our boulders scattered about the walls and courtyard to remind my brethren forever that the church cannot exist outside of the state, that we are linked by divine providence to the King of Haunts.
You'll be rebuilding the place from rubble.
Otto Levin angered you greatly.
There is that, yes.
A commotion in the distance down the western road and away from the chapel caught their action.
Your coach?
De Gilb just shook his head and continued staring at the approaching wagon, rolling along at great speed. He could tell from the sheer recklessness of the driver that something was amiss.
Powrys! Powrys!
Ares, a damn bloody cat!
Damn her!
The three waited as a group that included the driver came running toward them.
Powries! An army of the beasts crawling out of the river all the way to Delaval City!
By the old ones, not again.
You are a cord, lad. King Yizzleneck would have you sweep the riverbank clear of the beasts while the warships put down their barrel boats.
My fight is here.
King Yizzleneck!
Shut up! If he speaks another word, put him in a catapult basket and throw him at Gwydra.
The messenger blenched, fell back a few steps and said no more.
We must go to the aid of the towns. With the armies in the field, they will be defenseless against the bloody caps.
Palmaris town has a garrison in place.
But the smaller towns...
Panlimaris turned his glower over his old friend, and at first it seemed as if he was going to simply dismiss the smaller towns as unimportant. But then a crack appeared in the mask of rage that was Panlimaris.
Go then! Leave me with just the catapult and porter crews. Lead the rest to the coast and sweep it clear, Palmaris town to Delaval.
You will need more than that if the monks come forth.
They're cowards and they'll hide. Get me every villager in Weatherguard and every town about and put a helmet on every head. The monks need not know of your march.
Milwellis looked to Harcourt skeptically.
Go!
Never comfortable in spirit form, Brother Jurgian willed himself along at great speed, wanting to be done with his duty as swiftly as possible. He ran atop the waters and had no corporeal form out here that could be harmed, of course, but still he imagined great monsters lurking beneath the dark gulf, ready to swim up and devour him. So it went for a long while as he made his way. He passed some Palmaris town warships, giving them a wide berth as they glided westward in full sail. He thought nothing of it until he came upon a second battle group, similarly rushing back to the west. Had they perhaps discovered the vanguard flotilla? Nervous but determined, Brother Jurgian moved swiftly to catch up to the ships and drifted upward, floating above the taffrail of one. He dared not approach, for several sailors stood there sharing a drink. He could feel the invitation of their corporeal forms, the soft and dangerous invitation and allure of possession. He remained cautious, but knew that he would not be serving Father Primujan and Dame Gwydra well if he did not try to discern the reason for the Palmaris town westward sail. Their chatter was mostly the gutter talk of bored sailors, but one phrase leaped out at the spirit of Brother Jurgian.
The river's full of berries!
Jurgian spent a long time trying to sort that out as he continued north along the wide Gulf of Corona. But when he happened upon a third battle group, this time flying the flag of Delaval, and saw that they, too, had turned westward and put up full sail, it all came crystal clear to him. The monk reversed his course, flying back toward his waiting body in St. Mirabel with all speed. He approached the towering walls in a matter of moments, for the return was always much easier than the journey from the body. But as he neared, he instinctively veered aside and moved past St. Mirabel, for Jurgian remembered the earlier siege and how it had broken. Brother Jurgian opened his physical eyes and pulled himself up from his kneeling position. He turned so fast and exited the small chamber with such urgency that he actually broke one of the hinges on the fragile door and stumbled to one knee in the small hallway. He didn't care. He ran for Dame Gwydra and Father Primujan. They all gathered immediately, so important was Jurgian's tale. It was 2 hours past midnight, but not a one in the room, not Gwydra, Dawson, Primujan, Giavno, Pinhour, or any of the others in attendance showed any sign of sleepiness, not after what Brother Jurgian had told them.
This is our chance.
A dozen brothers across the water to tell the vanguard flotilla to sail forth with all speed. If they arrive quickly enough, we can shatter the Palmaris town siege.
Yes, send the brothers forth. And Lady Dreamer, too, will sail out, guided by brothers and their gemstones, to meet the ships and guide them to a safe berth east of St. Mirabel.
Dawson nodded eagerly.
But we'll not wait the days for the reinforcements to arrive. We've 300 veterans in our midst, and brothers mighty in the use of gemstones.
Panlimaris is still more than 1,000 strong by Brother Jurgian's guess. We'll be under catapult fire the entire way through the gates and down the hill.
We'll not walk out the gates, Father.
All eyes turned Giavno's way.
As Brother Pinhour escorted Dawson to us.
Looks of confusion mixed with many nodding heads and grins of understanding.
You cannot be thinking...
Oh, but I am.
That very night, Dawson McKeague bade Callan Duorne farewell again, took the arm of Brother Pinhour, and went across the dark waters to the west. Six other monks accompanied them to ride with Lady Dreamer and go forth from her deck as spirit-walking scouts guiding the journey across the gulf. At the same time, Brother Jurgian and a host of other brothers went out in spirit, running across the gulf to find the Vanguard flotilla and instruct them to sail south, and also to mark the movements and positions of the many Palmaristown and Delaval warships sailing westward about the gulf. When that was accomplished, and Brother Pinhour returned the next morning with news that Lady Dreamer had put out, the more immediate planning went into full swing.
You cannot expect me to take him or his proposition seriously.
Bonnegran spoke to Riandu.
Ethelbert wears his desperation clearly. He is afraid, and knows the war is soon to end, and so he tries to turn us to his cause. He has nothing else to play.
His cause is Dame Guidra's cause.
Father Otto Leverns, you mean? You would have me join with Ethelbert. You would have me turn the Army of Pride about and assault King Yeselnik for the sake of Laird Ethelbert and your church.
Do you think Yeselnik a more deserving king than Laird Ethelbert, truly?
I think the ways of the world do not ask my opinion.
The ways of the world ask neither Delaval nor Ethelbert nor Yeselnik's opinion. No divine angel swept down and told Delaval to claim the throne. No just and good god would ever ask that of that idiot Yeselnik.
You cannot speak of the King of Horn such. I have pledged my fealty to him.
You have often called me friend.
And you make it a difficult proposition ever.
If I am your friend, then I must be able to speak my heart to you. And I did.
I know the treachery you plan. You are encouraged by the arrival of Laird Ethelbert. I know that you will flee at the first opportunity with those brethren you have brought, and Ethelbert's men will no doubt rejoin them.
They will not. On their word, they are out of this war as they promised. Laird Ethelbert's arrival here does nothing to change that.
We shall see. And if not to Ethelbert, then they will go with you to your home chapel, to the side of Father Otto Leven, where your loyalty truly lies.
I'll not deny that. Never have I. I am a brother of the Order of Blessed Abel. It is his path I follow above all others. And that path leads me to St. Mirabel and Father Otto Leven, and not to Father de Gilbe. A man is a godless opportunist who has placed personal power and glory above the call of the Order.
Many believe that would make him a wise man.
A coward! Throughout the short history of our Order, brothers have sacrificed their lives before renouncing Blessed Abel. I expect no less of myself.
Because you expect a reward in the afterlife for your grand sacrifice. The Samhaste would not agree.
No. No, my friend. It is not for the afterlife. All the promises of Abel, great though they are, and indeed I do believe them, no. It is the principle of behavior that I place above even that promise. The greatest gift of Blessed Abel is the promise of better lives for all men, if all men follow the tenets of his order. The greatest promise is brotherhood joined, is common gain for common cause.
You truly believe that?
Enough so that if you present me with the choice of abandoning my course or feeling the mortal bite of your axe, I will suffer the blow.
So you say, until the axe hovers above your neck.
So I say, until my voice is quieted forever.
He is right, you know.
Brenton dropped to the ground in front of him.
Your idealism is foolish, childish even, in the light of darkness that has come to haunts.
And without that idealism, my life would be empty.
Brenton stared at him doubtfully.
You are to judge me. You, who thought yourself a murderer and nearly destroyed all that you have achieved in that ridiculous self-deception. Branson the assassin, the rogue highwayman who kills without mercy.
Once I believed, as you claim. And then Garibald was murdered, and I dared to believe again. And then Jameson Sequin was murdered. Bitter experience tells me that you chase a fool's road, as Bonnegrand declared.
Bitter disappointment has weakened your heart and your resolve, you mean?
You call Father de Gilbe a coward, but you say it from the shadows. Why did Riandu not so declare that to Father de Gilbe back in Pride Town, I wonder?
Because to invite such wrath would be foolish and counterproductive to the cause I serve. And because other men depend upon me to lead them to safety. And I would not throw that trust to Yeselnik's ill justice. And yes, Branson, Father de Gilbe is a coward and an immoral opportunist who sees a chance to usurp the power of rightful Father Otto Leven.
And thus, Bonnegran of Pride must also be a coward.
A cynic.
They are the same by your definition.
And so is Branson Garibald too, a coward?
Will he abandon you and your glorious cause, you mean?
Branson held out his hand, trying to give back the gemstones the monk had given him.
You cannot bring yourself to profit on the blood of innocents. And so, since you know that there is no personal gain for you here, you determine that this is no longer your fight. Branson will run away. You can run from this fight, Branson, but you cannot run from yourself. The gemstones are yours, forevermore. I grant them to you without demand, but with expectation that one day you will admit the truth to yourself.
Very slowly, Branson pulled back his hand. He didn't want to accept the stones, but he knew that without them, he would have no chance of defeating Afwen Wee and retrieving his sword or the brooch. Without them, he wouldn't likely even traverse the many miles to get back to his wife.
I am done with this war. To you, I am a coward, then.
When Riandu didn't immediately reply, Branson turned and walked away.
You are the bravest man I have ever known, Stork.
Who is that?
Banagran spoke to Riandu as they watched the approach of Laird Ethelbert and his entourage. It was the same group as the previous day, but with the notable addition of a man dressed in the colors of King Yezelnik. He wasn't chained, but the look on his face and his position between the dangerous man and woman from there spoke volumes regarding his status. Bonnegran glanced all around at the many warriors and archers he had pre-positioned. Unsure of how Laird Ethelbert would take his refusal of alliance, and knowing now that the man had brought his assassins with him, Bonnegran had duly prepared for all possibilities.
A gift? A prisoner exchange?
A man we found wandering the road, searching for you, to recall you. He comes with word of a Powry army swarming out of the Mesa Delaval and laying waste to the riverside settlements. We had to take him captive, of course. I have a particular fear of spies in these dangerous times. Surely you understand.
It's true, Laird Bonnegran. Hundreds of the little rats, and oh, but they killed a few and more.
Your King Yezelnik's kingdom is being assailed before it can even be formed.
King Yezelnik bids you return with all speed, and with his army.
The courier glanced back at Ethelbert, who nodded for him to proceed. From his belt, he produced a rolled parchment and handed it over to Bonnegran. The seal was broken, but the two halves very much resembled the wax press of King Yezelnik. Bonnegran handed it to Riandu, who pulled it open and read it quietly to him. Riandu finished a few moments later.
Convenient for Laird Ethelbert to turn me away with your city gates nearly in sight.
Perhaps the old ones or Blessed Abel favor me. But surely I have no love of Powrys, and this is not my doing.
I cannot disagree, if this man is who you claim, and if his words are true. Else, it is indeed your doing.
Then you will march back to my gates even angrier.
There are more couriers, Laird, more riding east along the road. They should reach the end of your long line this very day, if they've not already.
And then you will turn for home. Only to turn back yet again, and come against me once more, I expect. I do believe you will kill half your men simply from marching while my army rests and prepares.
Bonnegran stared hard at him, but did not respond.
Or we could march beside Laird Bonnegran, joined in common cause against the Powry marauders.
Both Ethelbert and Bonnegran looked at Cormac as if he had surely lost his mind.
Give them a tent and food. You may remain as my guest while I confirm this tale. Perhaps you will find yet another unlikely reprieve, albeit a temporary one.
With Ethelbert's and Bonnegran's permission, Cormac and Milkayla did not remain with Laird Ethelbert and his entourage, going instead with Bonnegran and Master Riandu. Cormac did not surrender his notion of joining the forces together in common cause.
This could be our chance to end this miserable war, an opportunity for the men of Hants to remember that they are brothers and that there are enough enemies in the wider world without them battling each other.
Who are you?
Bonnegran walked away.
It is not so misplaced a notion. I would welcome such a resolution.
Your own resolution, that of the Church, I mean, might be harder to discover, Master Riandu. You march with Yezelnik, thus with Father de Gil.
You know him?
He led my mission to Alpinador. Indeed, it was his fight with me, his determination that I be banished from the Order, even executed for my crimes. That precipitated his wider argument with Father Primujan of Chapel Pelennor, and ultimately with Father Artulivan, both of whom judged my cause and course correct.
Father de Gilb is no voice of a just God.
I bid you to reconsider your course, Master Riandu. Father Otto Levin and the brothers of Saint Mirabel have spoken of you as a beacon of light in this dark night. It is true. I was sent to Ethelbert Dossentel to forge the alliance with Laird Ethelbert, but that alone would not suffice. Nay, to Pride Town I was to go, to speak to you and implore you to show Laird Bonagran the justice of our cause and the injustice of Yeznelnik's road. You are a man of honor, so claims Father Otto Levin and Brother Pinauer, and as such, you would understand the truth of Dame Guidra. Alas, but it saddens me to see you in the service of King Yeznelnik and Father de Gilb.
I am no friend to de Gilb. I serve Laird Bonagran. I serve Pride Town, my home. If they march to war, then my brethren and I are compelled to travel beside them and tend their wounds. But whatever the outcome of this campaign in the East, I deign not to return to Chapel Pride. My road is to Saint Mirabel. Oh, and how that name rolls sweetly from my lips. My fealty, and that of the monks who have joined me on this march, the whole of Chapel Pride's brothers, is to Otto Levin, father of the Order of Blessed Bell.
Then speak to Bonagran, your laird and your friend.
He will not betray King Yeselnik for Laird Ethelbert, or for your Dame Guidra, whom he does not know.
But will he allow Laird Ethelbert to bring forth his army to join in the fight against the Powrys?
The word of a Powry force is true, then.
The courier was from King Yeselnik, yes. And by that man's words, and not just the letter from Yeselnik, the Powrys swarm the banks of Maesir Delavar.
It is rumored that they assailed Palmeris Town at the behest of Dame Guidra. But I see doubt on your face, brother.
In Alpinador, a band of Powrys fought beside us in our struggle with ancient Badden, for they, too, would have perished by his hand. It is possible that they are among this force, but the word of the courier, it seems that the whole of the Weathered Isles have emptied onto the shores of Hants. This is not the doing of Dame Guidra. Never would she set such a scourge upon the land as that.
Branson the Highwayman will support our claims. He was there with us when we battled ancient Badden. The Powrys of Lake Mithranadun were the ones who first rescued him after his fall from the glacier.
Branson is gone. To the north, I expect. And his wife at St. Mirabel. He was there, beside Powrys.
Common enemies make for unexpected alliances. Perhaps now again, and with an alliance, that will remind the folk of Hans that we are all brothers. Press your Laird Bonagran, I beg. Fate has given us a chance to heal the wounds of the land torn by war.
Riandu looked across the way toward the distant command tent of Bonagran. The monk made certain that he was in that tent with the Laird when other couriers came up from along the long line of the marching army to confirm the news and order the recall of Bonagran's forces. Riandu seized the moment, imploring Bonagran to take the offer of Laird Ethelbert to march beside Hans' allies against their common foe. The Bear of Hans offered a simple and short answer.
Shut up.
Bonagran's turn to the west was immediate, breaking camp that very afternoon.